We have a fairly fascinating topic to look at together today. And I want to take enough time to set the stage properly so that not only will everyone who's going to join in be able to arrive and catch the first few thoughts, but so that you and I can have a context for the study. I don't know how many of you come because you see the title of the talk or are attracted to that particular topic, but what I said I would talk about today was how it was possible to unplug yourself from any painful moment. And wouldn't that be spectacular? Because God knows there are enough moments in this life that seem to produce pain. And if there was a way to just, you know, flip a switch, unplug ourselves, that'd be brilliant. Well, in a way there is. And that's what we're going to look at. So let's see what kind of trouble we can get into. The key lesson that I wrote today and for our time together says the problem is that you don't live in the world that you think you do. On the other hand, the problem is you live in the world you think you do. It's not double talk. The problem is we don't live in the world that we think we do. On the other hand, the problem is that we live in the world that we think we do. Now, how can we understand an idea like that, assuming we can sense that there's some truth to that, that we don't live in the world we think we do? This isn't a world of thought out here, people, places, conditions, conflicts. But on the other hand, we live in the world that we think we do. That there has never been a time when the basis of any of the older, truer teachings were formulated, that all of them weren't constituted around a particular idea, which I'm just going to touch on for a few moments, and then we're going to go on. I have a couple stories to tell you. But at the root of the idea of nirvana, of rebirth, of an individual awakening and coming into a soul life, all of these orbited around a particular idea. And that is that as a human being, unlike creatures in nature, who have only the nature that great nature has given them and that they must act from without choice so as to fulfill the greater need of greater nature, which doesn't care about the individual creature, you and I have more than a single nature, so to speak. It's really one nature, but it's divided up. And again, it's not really divided. I know it sounds like I'm contradicting myself, but I'm not. In the Eastern teachings, they call some of the characteristics of this consciousness nafs, N-A-F, a naf. In the Old Testament, New Testament, it's alluded to as the difference between a nefesh, which has to do with a lower consciousness, a certain kind of animal soul, and the Ruach Adonai, the actual breath, the spirit, the soul that was breathed into this animal nature, kind of like the kernel of corn and a seed that is intended to outgrow itself. And these teachings allude to things. Nothing can be said directly. But for instance, there's this story in the East, Mulla Nasruddin, I don't know if I pronounce his name right, a Hajja, a teacher of the time, so to speak, but a famous character in certain Sufi stories. And the story goes that Nasruddin was always losing his donkey. And everybody kind of knew that about them. And every once in a while, he'd go out looking for this donkey. And he'd go through town as he was looking for the donkey, singing, smiling, carrying around like things couldn't be better. And finally, one of the people in the village asked him, "Why are you so joyful, Mula, teacher? Teacher, why are you so happy right now? We thought that you had lost your favorite donkey." And this is the classic response, and it will address a lot of what we're going to look at together. He says, "Yes, I did, my friends. But at least I wasn't writing it at the time. Because if I had been, I'd be lost too. I lost my donkey, but at least I wasn't riding it at the time, because if I did, I'd be lost too. What does that story mean? We don't live in the world we think we do, but on the other hand, we live in the world that we think we do. It means that the teacher was referring to the fact that there is a part of himself that often gets into trouble, wanders away, gets lost. We have something in us that often wanders away from us, don't we? And that gets lost, winds up getting into all manner of difficulty because it's guided by its own instinct. It's guided by its own nature, which is incapable of considering anything other than it wants. A creature that has no choice but to respond to its own instinct, whose reactions determine the reality for the creature. That's the nature of the naf. That's the nature of the nefesh. It has no governing body. It is governed by its own nature. And this is what we want to look at today, if we're going to learn how it's possible for us to unplug ourselves from painful moments. So here's the first story. Take a nice deep breath. We're looking at principle. I'll explain it, but I want you to get the feeling of it first. Let's just say, for the sake of the story, that two friends have gone to visit another friend who lives on a mountain. Kind of a odd duck, but they're attracted to him because of his demeanor and because he seems to understand something they don't, and they like to visit whenever they can, in the off chance that something will transpire that will encourage them to develop their own consciousness. So there they are, and they go for a hike up into the mountains. In the mountains, everyone knows the weather's fairly precarious. And sure enough, as they get near the crest, quite a ways from home, all of a sudden starts to form in the sky above them this massive, dark thundercloud. And if you've ever been in the mountains and you know how precarious the weather is, these things pop up out of nowhere and often bring with them very cold, freezing winds, rains, terrible temperatures to be caught out in. And certainly that's what was about to happen to these people. So they're all looking up at the storm. And all of a sudden they notice their friend look up and kind of just wave his hand. And they're thinking to themselves, what in the world is he doing? Like he's trying to brush away a fly or an insect. And their wise friend is no more doing this. Then all of a sudden, they watch this cloud that was forming and dark. And if you've ever seen these thunderheads, 30, 40,000 feet, all of a sudden the thing just begins to morph back and shrinks into a little tiny little white cloud and floats off down the mountainside. They look at their friend, they go, did you have anything to do with that? What was going on? And their friend just looks at them like, I don't know what you're talking about. And they look, the storm was upon us. What did you do? And he looks at them and he says, I decided not to make anything out of it. I decided not to make anything out of it. Just let it fall on you for a moment. What if in the moment when suddenly there is this massive thunderhead, this storm cloud, you can see it just appear, and that's how they do. The conditions just produce these storms. What if in that moment you were able to look at that pending doom, that feared event, that disturbance right at the bottom of yourself, and you were able to say, I decided not to make anything out of it. I tell you that that's one of the gifts that a human being has, but only when that human being begins to understand, and I'll put this in the words of, I'm not sure if all of you know who Henry David Thoreau is, a very beautiful naturalist, one of the first people concerned with climate, philosopher. Anyway, He said concerning these things, it's not what you look at that matters, it's what you see. It's not what you look at that matters, it's what you see. Now, let's go back to I decided not to make anything out of it, because I'll tell you a quick personal story. I have a lot to cover, but I just want to give you a little flavor of this, because, like, for instance, Chris wrote down there, for me, it's not logical, it's visceral panic. No negative state is logical. Unfortunately, it is logical to the consciousness that then sends these ripples through this body, and the body not wanting them and the mind resisting its own manifestations literally does go into a visceral kind of panic. But the body doesn't panic by itself. The body is the instrument of the mind. They do not operate independently. So let me get on to this. So what is today? Saturday. Yesterday, I love golf. Most of you, at least who ever listen to me talk, I tie once in a while into it, some of these things. And one of my wedges had died. A wedge is a certain club, and the grooves were gone. And I ordered a used wedge that I found online, and I'd been expecting it. And then lo and behold, I find out that instead of sending it UPS like the eBay said they would, they send it UPS, but then it goes through the post office. And where I live in the country, you don't get packages in your little mailbox on the street. You get notices that say, I came by, sorry, I missed you. And then you've got to go drive 20 miles into town and stand in line with a very grumpy post office person who doesn't even want to go look for your package. This is historical, partially hysterical, but historical too. And so I took pains. I wrote out this note. I pasted it inside the mailbox. It said, dear postperson, the gate is open. And if you don't want to drive through the gate, just leave it at the gate, please. So that way I won't have to come into town. I took great pains to do this. So then I get back from a doctor's office appointment yesterday, and I drive up to the mailbox there on the street. And I open the mailbox and I look inside, and there slid right between all the notes that I put was the little slip. Sorry, you weren't available. You'll have to go pick it up. Now, you know what happens when things like that happen. What's wrong with people? My taxes pay for the post office. Exorbitant fees my foundation pays. I mean, to send pack. I mean, just on and on and on. The mind begins like an air raid siren, winding up, talking about this person and why they don't care about any but themselves. And now you're going to have to just, and try to follow me now. The mind looking at the event over which it has no control whatsoever. I did what was in my power. I made a note. I asked kindly that they do other than they've always done. But this person summarily does not want to be bothered. Now, why should I give my life away to anyone or anything, and I don't care what it is, when that person doesn't line up with what I insist they should be like, and then my insistence turns into this massive ball of resistance that becomes a string of reactions? And the next thing I know, I'm in a storm, a massive storm cloud. And what is the nature of that storm? What is the nature of that storm? If not a level of consciousness that doesn't understand, A, it cannot change the conditions it resists. B, the more it resists the condition it doesn't want, the more exacerbated the condition becomes. And the bigger the condition becomes, the more sure the consciousness is that the reason it feels this conflict and hatred and resentment and resistance is because of what happened. And that is not the reason that that consciousness is going through that. The consciousness is going through the only iteration available to it because, as Thoreau said, it was looking at what it says that matters instead of seeing the fact that the whole circumstance is that exacerbated because of a certain level of consciousness that insists life line up the way it's supposed to line up for us. And that, by the way, is the definition of madness. So simply put, I decided not to make anything out of it. Now, does that mean that I didn't hear and feel all of this stuff rolling through, the rumblings of a distant storm, either approaching or, God bless, you know, fortunately, fall, you know, going away? So how do we begin to change what we see? Because this consciousness is always going to see what it wants to see so as to confirm the identity established in whatever that reaction is. Here's where we have new self-knowledge that's critical. First, let's take a cloud. I can't call myself anything. I love nature. I love weather. You know, I like to study, I guess you'd call it meteorology. I like the relationship between pressure systems, because it's all, everything that you see in the world around you exists as a principle in formation because of something inside of ourselves that corresponds to it. We are looking at ourselves. I don't care what you look at in the world. I don't care what relationship you look at in the world. You are looking at something that begins with in you. So that really what you're looking at is a reflection of your own consciousness, only made into matter, into time and space. And we can begin to understand why, as above, so below, as within, so without. Because we are actually looking at the world and able to study the content of our own consciousness through the relationships we have with the world. So here's these clouds. Now, what creates clouds? Clouds exist as they do because there are certain very unique conditions that come together under certain auspices that produce them. High pressure, low pressure, moisture in the air, wind patterns. All of these produce these seeds. For instance, a cloud forms by and large when warmer air meets colder masses above and starts to condense and form these clouds. So these clouds exist because of the conditions that allow their creation. But if you change any one of those conditions, that cloud is going to change. That's the nature of it. Change the condition for the creation of a cloud, the kind of cloud that's created changes. That's simple if you can see it with me. And if that's true, that means that you can't separate the clouds from the conditions that produce them, whatever that may be. Change one element, change all of the elements. That's exactly what it means when we say to ourselves, here's the storm, I decided not to make anything out of it. Because the reason the storm, the cloud, that negative state, the reason it appears to us the way that it does is because our consciousness is complicit in its creation. That storm, everything we don't want, doesn't exist without everything we do want. Whatever we resist doesn't exist without something that we insist upon. I covered this, I think it was Wednesday night. By the way, I speak 3 or 4 times a week, and you can find out about that. It's all free. Go to the profile here. So until we change something about the nature of the seer, this consciousness, until we change something of the nature of the seer, we are only going to be able to see and react to what our consciousness is telling us has happened. So that by and large, an event takes place, certain conditions are created because something acts upon our consciousness, the content of it, the things we imagine have to be, things we're attracted to or attached to, the things we're dependent on, and all of these things interact in this consciousness, and suddenly this consciousness begins to formulate from the relationship between the event and what it acts upon. That consciousness formulates what it sees as being reality. But it's not the whole story, because that reality is missing a key element, and the key element is the awareness of the event and the consciousness being acted on at the same time. That's what happens when we begin to change the nature of the seer. We start to understand. It's not what we look at that matters. It's who's seeing it. And who's seeing it isn't a question of being an optimist or any of that other garbage. where we try to have a right attitude towards the moment, and I believe this, and I'm going to hold that to be true. That's the recipe for ruining your life. You don't need to try to change anything you see. You need to be aware of the consciousness that sees what it does and then reacts the way it does. Because that consciousness, unbridled like that donkey, wanders off and makes its own problems. And every once in a while, should be very clear to us, it wanders off without us. But it's not meant to wander off without us. We are meant to be there as a kind of ruling intelligence, an overriding awareness that is present to everything that's going on in that consciousness. So the consciousness can't carry us away and drop us off on top of a mountain someplace where it rains holy hell on us. You never have to be in the continuation of any psychological pain, ever. That doesn't mean the conditions that create and reveal this perturbance won't happen. They have to. Because the events, what is timeless, comes into what is time, brings up the seeds of these things. But the seed of this consciousness isn't what this consciousness is intended to grow into, or more accurately, grow out of. Because that seed can lay in the ground and abide alone and die there, as Christian teaching would say, and something new can be born, a new conception, which is an order of consciousness that understands it doesn't need to suffer because of something that happens outside of it, or seemingly to it. Let me go on with this. I'm going to run out of time. I can see it. How do we begin to understand this, to change this? So another story. Take a nice deep breath. I'll slow down. I don't want to go too fast, but I also don't want to leave anything out of what I want to tell you about. Here's two friends, best friends, Paula and Susie. And keep in mind, if you will, that all stories that I tell, like any true parable, you and I are all the characters. We are the storyline. We are the elements. Or even where it's taking place. All of that is part of our consciousness. Two friends, Susie and Paula. They work together, and from time to time, especially if they win an award for excellence at their work, they get awarded these vacations, and they go on them together. And this is their third trip, and they have a favorite place they like to go. And just for me, it'll be some tropical island with crystal clear waters that you can go diving in and spend time with the wildlife in the waters. And they go and they love to sit on the beach, you know, under one of those umbrellas and with those cocktails and the umbrellas. And then they have a bang up time. But this time, like the time before, Paula seems extra tense. And Susie noticed it the last time, but didn't say anything. And Paula, she's sitting there and she's reading a book. You know, people like to read books laying on the beach, and she's reading this book, and Susie can see she's clenching her towel with one hand, digging her toes into the sand. Something clearly is disturbing Paula. Finally, Susie speaks up. Paula, what's going on? I mean, we've been here for about 5 days now, and for 5 days, I don't know, every time we're out here, you seem so tense, and even not even tense just out here, but for the most part, you seem distracted. I don't understand what's going on with you. Paula looks at her, very earnest. I don't know if you've ever noticed this. When you're negative, you are so sure about why you're negative. It's ludicrous for even to question you. Paula says, you know what? She says, everything happens terrible, just bad. Everything happens bad. Susie, what are you talking about? And of course, Paula, in her own head, having no idea that she's referring to, that Susie can't understand, that Paula is referring to the captain of this ship in the book that she's reading. A marvelous story, Paula says, about this captain, and she's going to look for this mythical land where there are these healing waters. And if she can get herself and the crew there, they can bring some of these waters back and save the world. But one storm after another, Paula says, the girl can't get a break. And then the crew wants to mutiny because everything is going sour instead of sweet the way it's supposed to on the ship and the way Paula promised. And all this goes on. And please, once again, bring yourself into it. Doesn't this ship of our life constantly run into one reef after another? And you know the mutiny where the voices in your head are going on, and where no more things get straightened out. It looks like smooth sailing, then the next storm comes wafting in. So Paul says, it's just making me crazy. Susie says, I don't understand, Paul. Unless I'm mistaken, weren't you reading this same book the last time we were here last year? And I think even the time before? Paula looks at Susie like, what's wrong with you? Yeah, of course I was. Susie says, how many times have you read it? Paula says, I don't know, too many times to count, I guess. Susie shaking her head, I don't understand. If this book gets you so upset every time you read it, why don't you just find another book to read? Paula looks over at Susie like she's crazy and says, oh, sure, that's easy for you to say. But how do I know I'd like another book? I mean, I hope you get it. I read the same book. I have the same experience over and over and over again. And I keep picking up the same story, meaning I keep listening to the same reactions tell me what it is that's happening to me. And I don't know if I want any other experience than that, because I accept over and over again these storms. We've been conditioned, you and I, in a manner that's so deep, it's almost impossible to describe. For humanity, fear is now natural. Hatred, resentment, violence, it's the solution to our suffering, to either blame someone or something for this storm as it's pouring itself into our mind and then pushing us out into the world to try to change or blame things, where we're so far down the wrong road that we don't even recognize anymore the little part of us that's trying to tell us there's another book. There's something else that you can read. You can learn to read the moment in a completely different way. And not because you're trying to add to the moment some ideology, I call it ideology, some kind of ideology, some kind of belief system, some kind of spiritual teaching, not because you're trying to adorn that moment that has the heartache in it with something that makes it acceptable, because at last, now you are there as part of the experience, seeing the naf, seeing the nefesh, seeing this consciousness trying to drag you into its world, so that it can tell you who you are and what you have to do. And then you have the familiarity of that experience again and again and again, so that it even seems ludicrous to think that there might be something else that we can do with this life of ours. There's another book, call it the book of life if you want, where the first chapter in it, and I think that's why you're studying with me, if you are, why we're here working together to understand these things, where the very first chapter says it is possible for you to unplug yourself from the pain of any moment, that you can look at this thought, this reaction starting. See, that's the problem, isn't it? Don't be concerned. I know that one person, I don't know who it was, said that's visceral. I know that. And I'm not going to sit here and tell you that somehow or other what I'm describing to you is an easy road to hoe. It's not. But compared to working in a field that ground is so hard that you take one poke at it with your hoe, and then something tells you it's time to go get a lemonade and things may or may not work out, and there's always tomorrow, to that kind of life is such a nightmare. We're meant to be in this field of our own life, working every single day, you and I, and not working to control people or change circumstances, but to become present to our own consciousness consistently enough that we can begin to see in these moments that the condition that we're struggling with, the pain that we're in that moment, is inseparable from the consciousness that's describing it. And that we have accepted because we don't know any better. We've never been taught to at least question whether or not that nature in us that has this instantaneous negative reaction. I'll walk through it with you. Chris says, to me, I wonder, chicken or egg, cannot the physical pain or external stressor cause me first and then get my mind spinning? See, that's what I'm saying, Chris. That's what I'm saying to everybody. The external stressor. We have all these terms now, by the way, for what triggers us, and we fail to realize that nothing can be triggered in me that doesn't have a trigger to it, and that it's my mind. Chris, it's your mind. It's your consciousness. It was given to you for a purpose, I might add. And the purpose of what you were given wasn't so that it could be triggered by somebody not delivering your food to the table in time, or somebody online professing some opinion, religious or philosophical or political, so that then you turn into a torrent of stormy thoughts and feelings. Don't you understand? Can't you see by now? There can be no negative reaction without resistance. That's math. I cannot have a negative reaction without something in me looking out and going, no, no, I don't like you, I don't like this, what we call the stressor. And there can be no continued resistance to that moment unless something in my consciousness is supporting the reasons for that resistance. Now, what's the nature of that resistance? Other than I came into that moment with the donkey. I came into that moment with a nature that already knows how people should be, that already knows the way that the world should be, a much better world if I ruled everything. Everything would be that way if only I could get everything to line up. And I know Chris says, but I've lived too long that way. With apologies. No. Look, if you want to accept that, that's your business. I'm not here to tell anybody what to do about anything. I'm looking out and I see what I see, and I bring to you what I see, and I ask you if you can see it. And if you have that consciousness that says that, you know, I'm too old of a dog to change, then you're going to go and you'll live with your bones. But I don't believe that for a moment. You wouldn't be here listening and looking at all of this taking place if there weren't something in you that in some way or another recognized that without this resistance that's supported by reasons, and the reasons belong to an old nature, an old consciousness, the reasons belong to a global consciousness that has brought with it through time all of these fears and hatreds and races, all of this separation, all of this activity that appears without anyone asking it to, and that defines the darkness that comes over it by merely calling up all of the reasons why you feel that way. And by the way, most of the reasons we have for being negative, they're not even our own reasons. We learned them and adapted to them and imitated them and saw them being handed down as the only possible solutions to the pain that we're in. And I'm describing to you something that's completely different than that. I can understand. I can't have this reaction without resistance. Now, what's my resistance to the post office? They're not doing what I want them to do. So without my insistence, there wouldn't be that resistance. Now, what does what someone should or shouldn't do, right or wrong, have to do with me being thrown into a storm? That's the question you have to ask yourself. They didn't create the storm. The truth is, one must learn to thank these circumstances. Christ said, love thine enemies. Why? because it is these conditions, these stressors that reveal this consciousness that has come forward in time, so full of demands and insistence, so full of the things that it believes must be that way, or it can ever be happy, that it's never happy because nothing lines up for the most part with what it demands. So for us, life has turned into this place where we're forever trying to control people and control things around us. Instead of understanding the only thing that needs to be dealt with is that we need to stay present to the donkey. We need to stay present to this consciousness that's forever responding unconsciously, mechanically, looking at this event and making a storm out of it. What do you think self-judgment is? Every moment in which a man or a woman suddenly turns on themselves and feels inadequate, thinks to herself or himself, I'm too old, I've gone on too long like this, I don't want to deal with it. What in the name of God with a capital G tells any human being that they must learn to live with hatred, fear, and resentment, if not deep, dark self-judgment? I'll tell you what tells you that. It is that consciousness that I'm describing to you as I'm speaking, because it requires you being saddled by it so that it can take you where it wants to take you. And in this instance, it's into a series of endless storms that it blames the world for, or that it hates itself for. I decided not to make anything out of it. Now I'm going to ask you a question or two, and then we're going to end this for today. Does anyone listening here actually think that hatred, fear, resentment, worry? Does anyone here actually think that those negative reactions are conducive to anything positive, healthy, good for the individual or for the world? And I'll be very advanced here and tell you, obviously, there is no such thing as any dark, negative reaction that can produce in this world anything positive. Negative reactions are poisonous. But we can't change the fact that we have a negative reaction. That we can't do, because a negative reaction means something in this consciousness instantaneously appears to deny whatever it is that has come about to reveal the content of that consciousness. That consciousness, that donkey, does not want to be revealed as a lower level of being. It wants to be the whole of our being. So if, in fact, we know and agree that while we can't stop the negative reaction, we can begin to see that cloud of conflict information, this we're given, I can actually see my own mind as it begins to resist its own interpretation of the moment, making out of that interpretation a prison. I can actually see that take place. You can see that take place. That means that while I can't stop the first reaction actually has a place in the greater scheme of spirituality. Because the first reaction is the revelation of an order of myself I don't know lives in myself. So that I can learn to love mine enemy, that which brings this up inside of me, because I can learn to be grateful for the grace of being given an opportunity to realize I have brought forward with me in time this anger, this fear, this defensiveness. I brought forward to me this insistence, and it's killing me. And I always thought it was you killing me. No, I'm complicit in it. And when I have that understanding, and I understand that the continuation of this negative reaction, which is what resistance does as it produces all the reasons for it, is poisoning me. And I am not going to agree to drink poison. I'm not going to agree to take poison into my system. And when we identify with our own negative reactions and let those negative reactions justify the enmity, the violence, the conflict, I don't care what you say causes it. You must learn not to care. You must learn to be astonished that something in you would actually rise up and validate and justify poisoning yourself. Because that's what the continuity of these negative reactions do. It is that consciousness poisoning itself so then it can have someone to blame and hate for the poison and then try to figure out what it needs to do to heal itself by changing people and places around it. And it can't do it. I decided not to make anything out of it. If you know that what I've described is true, and we will all have negative reactions today, it's part of this physical life, part of the development of our consciousness. If you have one of those reactions today, sit and become a cloud watcher. I'd do certain exercises. I didn't even know they were exercises. I was just attracted to it. I used to lay down on the lawn and I could make a cloud appear and disappear with my attention. I would literally, I don't know whether the cloud would appear or not, but by using my attention, and if you watch on a very still day, if you're very quiet, you can actually see the clouds moving. See, we want to become cloud watchers so that we can catch this consciousness watching. Watch it formulate what it does, and then understand as you see what it's doing, I've decided not to make anything out of this. Then you will unplug yourself from a certain level of consciousness that ceaselessly punishes itself and everyone else that happens to fall into its orbit. 42 minutes, that's it. Do your work. It's possible. We're here for that. And if you can, find me.